Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining us at St. Columba Anglican Church in Beaumont, Alberta. I'm Stephanie London, and it's December 24th, 2022. Our text this evening is from Luke chapter 2, the account of Jesus' birth. Tomorrow morning in my house, and maybe yours or your grandchildren's or your neighbor's, or home of your memory, something will happen. During the night, something will change. When I was a kid, we would travel down to Calgary to visit my grandparents. We'd unload our bags and walk into their little living room, and there would be a real tree with quirky, sprawling branches, and vintage ornaments and lights. And the house would smell like whatever my grandma was cooking. The TV would be playing Christmas movies, and that night it would be oh so hard to fall asleep, because my insides were vibrating with excitement. I just couldn't wait. I slept in the little bedroom upstairs where my mom and her sisters had their bunk beds when they were little. My parents would be downstairs with my brother in a creaky old cot. So early in the morning, I could creep out into the silent living room before anyone else was up and find that something had changed. Packages had appeared under the tree. Our stockings had thickened with mysterious bumps and lumps. Soon the aunts and uncles would appear, and my grandma would pull something delicious out of the oven, and everyone would sit there and eat breakfast. But secretly, I was wishing for them to hurry up, because it was Christmas, and eating was really not the point. Maybe you have memories of a similar Christmas. I hope you do. Now that I'm older, I understand what they say, that what drives the Christmas magic is those who work unseen in the background to make it happen. On Christmas Eve, mysteriously, overnight, when we're asleep, something changes, something is given. Someone is born. Even to this cold and suffering world, Christmas shows up. And on this holy night, Christmas calls us to pause here and lay our burdens and hopes at the manger, where tonight God's Son is born. In truth, we can't separate the birth of this baby, the one Isaiah calls the Prince of Peace, from all that is not peaceful. As we gaze tonight on this tiny baby, we become aware of how thin our shoulders are, not nearly broad enough to hold our pain, alongside that of the people of Palestine, Syria and Ukraine, Myanmar and Eritrea, the pandemic and residential schools and the water crisis up north, and climate change and inflation and the price of food and our bank accounts. And who's going to take care of us when we're old? What of the future of our children and grandchildren and health scares? And who's going to take care of family members and broken relationships? Our shoulders are not broad enough to hold all of that, let alone heal it, let alone bring it to peace. Last week, the leaders of the churches in Jerusalem and the Holy Land published a letter. It was a celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, but also a plea to pray for and support those who, like Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, continue to face threats of violence, forced registration, family displacement, and existence as refugees in a foreign land. They also wrote, "We express our special concern for the faithful who remain as the Christian remnant in the land of our Lord's birth, who have increasingly faced attacks against their person, defamation of their churches and cemeteries, unwarranted restrictions against their attendance and worship, and legal threats against their possession and management of church properties. Such a disheartening atmosphere has led to lack of hope, especially among our Christian youth who increasingly feel unwelcome in the land where their ancestors have dwelt since before the birth of Christ." What does Christmas matter, then, if even in the land of Christ's birth, those who have taken his name are a tiny minority? On the surface, it would seem that not much has changed since that first Christmas. Suffering continues and peace seems absent. 2,020 plus years after Jesus' birth, even his own land is still embroiled in conflict. Things are not so different when Jesus is born in Bethlehem. His homeland is withered with suffering. For 1,000 years, their nation has been divided. For 500 years, they've been tossed around between conquering empire and conquering empire. By the time Jesus is born, it's been 400 years since Malachi, the last Old Testament prophet, spoke, calling the people back to God. It feels like the world is lost, and God is silent, and that every intervention God tried to make has failed. Still, they remember the increasingly distant stories of God breaking in, and they pray and pray and pray. But God fails to send a mighty heavenly army to squash everything that's going wrong. God fails to drive out their oppressors, fails to restore their own leaders, fails to call everyone back again to the faith. That's why what God does do is so surprising, so easy to miss and easy to ignore, so quiet and turned around that it sometimes still baffles us. God's ultimate intervention for this suffering world is the ultimate absurdity. A baby, just a baby, a poor and ignored baby at that, without a soft blanket or his own nursery, cast aside into a stable and born in the dirty, scratchy hay to a mother attended by her bewildered fiancé and a handful of scruffy sheep herders. It's no way to save the world. At least that's how it looked. Rather than fighting oppressors with stronger armies, God does the exact opposite. God sends the exact opposite of the glittering ranks of Caesar Augustus's forces, or the guards of Herod, the local king. God not just sends, but becomes. God becomes the exact opposite. God gives up all the glories of heaven to become an entirely weak, completely helpless, utterly vulnerable baby who cries and poops and giggles and squirms even as he weds in his tiny body the fullness of God, the fullness of humanity. In Jesus Christ, God chooses us. In humility, God consents to our weakness, gives up all claim to power and glory, embraces the limitations of our bodies, our emotions, our minds, this frail and stumbling and death-scourged flesh. God chooses and embraces us in all the messes we make and all the hurt we cause. In Jesus Christ, God says, "I am here because I love you." And even when all we hear is a baby crying, a mother swaddling and shushing, a father keeping watch, we know by faith that behind this manger scene is God's great plan to heal the world, hidden within the audacity of Christmas. The audacity that God would choose to become so small, this baby Jesus, who would never raise an army or overthrow Caesar or conquer the world. Instead, in weakness, the weakness of his birth and the weakness of his convict's death, he would carry us back to God. This baby Jesus, whom we meet tonight, is nothing less than the epicenter of God's peace, moving out from that point, like ripples growing stronger through the years as they spread, till the day when Isaiah's vision that we read here 3 weeks ago is fulfilled. God says, "They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." This baby we celebrate tonight plants God's peace in the world. And like the stream that wears away stone to form a canyon, God's peace will ultimately bring every violent tyrant down. With the birth of Jesus, that process takes root and gains speed. And as we gather around him this Christmas, we look with hope for the day that God's promise will be made real.